Hey, fellow mathers, do you have limited classroom time? Do you want to make the biggest, best impact on your students that you can? Then you need to start here with the Math is Figureoutable Challenge.
It's 3 1-hour sessions of the quickest and most powerful ways to reach the most students with the most math. We're having special guest Jenna Laib. Mark your calendars for May 15th through 17th at 7 p.m. Central and watch this space to find out when registration opens.
If you can't make those times, you'll want to register anyway so you can get access to the session recordings. And now, on to the episode. Hey, fellow mathematicians. Welcome to the podcast where math is figure-outable. I'm Pam.
And I'm Kim.
And I start, Kim. If you found a place where math is not about memorizing and mimicking, waiting to be told or shown what to do, but it's about making sense of problems, noticing patterns, and reasoning using mathematical relationships, we can mentor students to think and reason like mathematicians do. Not only are algorithms not particularly helpful in teaching mathematics, but rotely repeating steps can actually keep students from being the mathematicians they can be.
We wouldn't want that. We don't want to keep students from being mathematicians.
No. Hey,
Kim. How are you doing?
I am a little stretched. We are writing, and it's super exciting, all the things that we're getting done, but woo! We are
some long days.
Feeling a little stretched today.
Yeah. So I know you know this, but let's tell everybody that in Journey, your implementation support program, a few months back, one of the things we put in there are videos of problem strings. And so we go film in a live classroom with real kids.
Kim's laughing.
Yeah. Kim says real kids and it makes me crazy.
Because I say, you know, we like a video of real kids. And she's like, what, not fake kids? And I'm like, okay.
They're not scripted.
It doesn't feel staged. It's not scripted because we actually go in a real class. Is that better? It's a real class? Whatever. Anyway.
Yes, we go in classrooms and we film maybe expert teacher or one of us filming. Anyway, we do video. Then we put video and kind of a voiceover where we talk about the video and all the extras. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we shared a video of a problem string with first graders using one of my favorite strategies. It's not my only favorite, but I sure do love it. And a member at that time was asking, hey, I'm curious, what time of the year is this? And it got me thinking that, and the responses I gave to her were kind of the major relationships that I think first graders need to work with kind of all throughout the year. So there are some kind of some things we do first and maybe towards the middle, but really these are major relationships that we kind of implement early and then continue to work on all year long. And so we've talked about major strategies for each operation before here on the podcast. There's some episodes about that.
Well, and can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
Sorry. So to reiterate, what you're saying is that this Journey member said, like, when in the year do you do this? And you pushed back. Go ahead.
Yeah. She said, when in the year is this? Because I want to know when in my year do I do this thing? And what I said was, and I'll tell you, it was an over strategy. And the question was, when in my year would I do this? Is it like early? Is it late? And so the conversation
as if there's a moment, right?
Yeah.
It's like you do the thing and you've done the thing. They've got the thing. You're done with that thing. You don't. And we're not saying that member necessarily had all that in their head.
No.
But we hear that a lot because we were taught that way. We were taught that there's you do it here. You teach it to mastery, you're done, you move on. And so you push back on that and you're like, actually.
Well, and there are some strategies that we would say are precursors to others. But for this particular conversation, what I shared was that there are some major relationships that I think first graders need to work with. And they might be a little less sequential, like this is, you know, beginning of the year, this is like the second 9 or 6 weeks, and then this is the third. So we thought that because we've talked about major strategies before and we've talked a little bit about very young counting ideas, we thought we would share, what do my kids need to know in first grade? Because we haven't really dialed into a particular grade. So yeah, let's talk about that today.
Excellent. Because there is that super young counting stuff. And then we've done a lot of work with the multi-digit today. Mm-hmm. Let's do some work with single digit stuff.
Yeah.
And we have an ebook that we've created. We will put the notes in the link in the show notes, where you can download it. We call it the Major Strategies ebook. Mm-hmm. I think, is that what we call it? That's what we call it behind the scenes. I don't know what we actually call it.
We call the ebooks. It's a
Major Strategies ebook. Kim's looking it up.
Most important numeracy strategies.
There you go. There's the official.
But really, there's a ton more in there. And
There's a lot of information in there. It's jam packed. You are going to want that if you don't already have it. Most of the listeners are like, of course we've already downloaded that, Pam. Mm-hmm. Well done. Good job. So we outline the major relationships that we believe kids need to develop so that strategies become natural outcomes. There's a hierarchy. And we think that we're some of the only work that has been done to develop this hierarchy of strategies. And because if you're not going to rote memorize algorithms, then what? And we put that in this ebook. Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to add in real quick. One of the things that we've talked about a lot that you're really dialing in on, and I think doing a really nice job of sharing, is that it's not like memorize all these new strategies. It's what are the relationships? Like, what are the actual big ideas of mathematics that if you strengthen those, then these strategies become natural outcomes. Mm-hmm. And I think you've said that really well lately. And I just wanted to mention it again, because it's less of like, now I have this checklist of strategies.
Kids couldn't memorize before, Pam, only one way. Now right. You want them to memorize five. Nope.
Right.
Nope. I don't want to memorize anything. I want to develop their brains, like you said, so that these relationships ping for them. They have intuition. When they see the numbers, they like, oh, this is what's coming to my mind. Ooh, so is this. Ooh, I have these major relationships that are happening. I'm gonna use that one this time to solve the problem.
Yeah.
Actually, I wish I would have used that one. Now that I've seen what I did, it's occurring to me. Oh, I could have just done. That's mathematical behavior. What pings for you? Use it. Look back. Decide. Could I have done something that sort of traveled a little slicker today? Nice. I appreciate that. Thanks. We've gotten more clear. Well, I think we were kind of clear in our heads about what we meant, but then we would hear people say back, my kids can't do one way. How do you want them to memorize five ways? We're like, it's not about memorizing.
It's an evolution.
We're all getting better at being more clear about all the things. Kim, what are the major relationships that we would want to build in, say, first graders as we look at single digit addition facts?
Yeah. So a really, really important one is partners of 10. Which I think then, that basic understanding of partners also extends to partners of 20, partners of other things. But within each of those other groups of larger partners of 20, partners of 100, there's this basic partners of 10 relationship that we really want kids to own.
You know, I remember the first time you said, when you think about partners of 20, I in my head thought about like, how do I even say this? Kind of like all the partners of 20. And you said it's really 20 plus the partners of 10.
10 and the partners of 10. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Wait. Oh yeah. Partners of 20. I was thinking about partners of 30. I don't know why. So for partners of 20, yes, it's thinking about 10. And then it, like right now you have the 10. Yeah. So now you're in the teens. And so then you're just using partners of 10. So let me go partners of 30. If you're thinking about partners of 30, that's probably when I thought of it, actually. That's why it was in my head. It was the moment when you said, well, then you could work with kids for a short period of time in partners of 30. And I pushed back and said, no, don't do that. And you said, yeah, Pam, it's not any random number to get to 30. It's once you have 20 established, then you're really just dealing with partners of 10. If you were dealing with partners of 60, you really want kids to think about, I got 50. And then partners of 10. That's the work you're doing, is to realize that inside these bigger numbers, there's always kind of this big multiple of 10 and just partners of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think people can sometimes hear that when we talk about I have you need, they might hear it as like, let me step up and do partners of 10 and partners of 20 and partners of 30. And once you get outside of the 10, then it's really what you're saying, the understanding of, the larger multiples of 10 and the partnership that you're trying to develop. It's not, now let me just step up and do this week. We do partners of 30 and then the next week partners of 40.
Or partners of 35.
Okay. Cool. So partners of 10 is one major relationship. Another major relationship is doubles. Mm-hmm. You know, kids early on have some intuitive sense about early doubles, but we can do some work to capitalize on that relationship because mm-hmm. it extends far, far beyond just first grade.
Yeah, mathematicians play with doubles. Mm-hmm. And then once they kind of have the sense of doubling, they play with halving. Doubles mm-hmm. and halves are super important. I did not know that as a non-real mathy person for very long. And I remember the day when I started realizing doubles are super important.
Would you call yourself a non, I don't know what you just said. I would say you were a traditional.
I said I was a non-real mather. Non-real mather. I was not real mathing.
Yeah.
Not on purpose.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And then the other major relationship is the idea of plus 10 to help you with things like plus 9 or plus 8. So a little bit over, a little bit more than you need. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it is plus 10 or a multiple of 10. So you're not going 18 to get to 17. 18 more to get 17 more. Yeah. It's really about capitalizing on the tens or the hundreds.
Because there's this nice pattern that that you can think about adding 10, especially in first grade. If I have some single digit number and I add 10, that's the definition of a teen. Uh-huh. So, you know, I've got 6 and I add 10. Bam, I need to know what 6 and 10 is. I need to know what 10 plus a single digit number is. That's a definition of those teen numbers. Sure. That's super important. And so we can almost practice that while we kind of try to develop an over strategy kind of thinking. Like we can say, hey, what's 6 plus 10? And the kid's like, oh, I know that. It's 16 because I know what the teens are. And you go, cool. What's 6 plus 9? If 6 plus 10 is 16, what's 6 plus 9? Is one of my favorite questions of all time to ask a kindergarten, first grade kid that's kind of, you know, so right on the cusp of what they're thinking about. Mm-hmm. Second grade, if they've never really thought about stuff. I could even ask that question of third grade, fourth grade kids. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, like, hey, what's 7 plus 10? That's 17. I know the teens. You're not going to get me here. Okay. What's 7 plus 9? Well, let me think about that. Ooh, those are related. Hey, that's just one less. And their eyes light up and it's so exciting.
Yeah.
Cool.
So when I responded to our journey member and I shared those three major relationships, then I think part of the conversation was, so I wouldn't say let's do partners of 10. Let's make sure all the kids own them really well. Now let's move on to the new relationship. So if my goal is that I want kids to get funky problems and they have these major relationships and they choose which of these relationships that you want to use, I'm going to start pretty early to develop kind of all of them, just, you know, with problem strings and with routines and with activities that we can do. And then highlight those relationships all throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And in order to choose, they have to have choice.
Yeah, for sure.
So when I want to own them, really develop them, and then when they work with them as they choose. Okay, mm-hmm. So Kim, if I asked you a most missed fact, an often missed fact, okay. kids are going to miss one. They typically will miss this.
Yep.
I would love to hear you use those major relationships to solve that particular problem. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So if I were to say, so teachers, do you agree with me? 7 plus 9. If a kid's going to miss a fact, often they will miss 7 plus 9.
Yep.
All right, Kim, how could you use each of those three relationships, partners of 10, doubles, and that sort of over plus 10 plus 9 relationship? How could you use those to solve all of them, each of them, to solve 7 plus 9? Go.
Okay. Well, this is a good problem because it is a most missed. So I'm going to actually write so I don't forget something, but I'm thinking if I'm using partners of 10, then I could think about 7 plus 3, which gets me to 10. But then I also have 6 left. So I take the 3 from the 9. Mm-hmm. So 7 plus 3 plus 6 gets me to 16.
And that's using the partners of 10.
Yeah, but I could also use the commutative property and turn that around. Mm-hmm. And I don't actually have to turn it around, but I could also say the 9 plus 1 plus 6 would also get me 16. So I'm either making 7 and 3 be the partner or I'm making 9 and 1 be the partner. But in either case, I have a leftover 6.
Nice. Nice. And that's using partners of 10. Cool.
Yep. Okay. Great. So then I also am thinking about doubles. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe one of the first things that kids do is think about the under doubles. So an under double would be 7 and 7. And then you have a leftover 2 from mm-hmm. the 9.
Mm-hmm.
And so also 16. But also we want kids to develop this idea that I could use the double over. So 9 plus 9 would be 18. And then I have 2 too much. So I would subtract 2 to get to 16.
Nice.
So that's another double.
I was talking with a slightly older kid the other day.
Uh-huh.
And I said, could you use doubles to help you think about that? And the slightly older kid said, well, if I know 7 and 7 is 14 and 9 and 9 is 18, then eight and eight has to be in the middle of that. That's 16.
I love that.
It's for a different problem, but it just kind of reminded me because I was writing as you spoke. And so uh-huh. I have on my paper, 7 plus 7 is 14 and 9 uh-huh. plus 9 is 18. Uh-huh. So it was cool to see that kid sort of, if I don't know that one in the middle, I know it's in the middle.
Yeah. Anyway. That's super cool.
Yeah.
And then the last one is kind of this over strategy or using 10. So I could say 7 plus 10 is 17, but I didn't really have 10. I only had 9. So I'm going to back up 1 to get to 16.
Add a bit too much. You're mm-hmm. supposed to add 9. Mm-hmm. Add a bit too much. Add 10. Back up that 1 because you added too much.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And you could theoretically do 9 plus 10 and then back up 3 because you only need to do 7.
Ugh.
It's not horrible. It's just the problem is set up so nicely to have the 9 be the second add-in. So
Yeah. But I think what you're saying is as these relationships grow up, as the numbers and relationships grow up, you might have a problem that you're adding something like 97. And you could say, well, I'm going to add 100 and back up 3. Oh, well, in that case, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Cool.
All right. So 3.
Can I give you one?
Yeah.
You always have me do math. Okay, you gave me 9 plus 7, but I'm going to give you what I think is the very most missed.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you 8 plus 7. But maybe the listeners can pause and think if they can come up with those ways to use those relationships first.
So for 8 plus 7, listeners, can you think of a way to use partners of 10?
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of a way to use doubles? And can you think of a way to use over, like this idea of plus 10 and back up?
And if these relationships are not new to you, I wonder if you could think about how you'd represent them with young students.
Oh, nice. Yeah. In fact, you might be interested to know that on my paper, as you were talking, I have 2 number lines and a set of equations.
I only have equations, but... I wasn't trying to model for anybody but me right here. So,
I'd be curious what you model as I talk through 8 plus 7.
All right.
Listeners, if you're paused right now, if you're going to think about it and model and then come on back. Okay. 8 plus 7. All right, Kim, for the relationships about partners of 10, I'm going to go ahead and say, I'm going to get 8 to 10. That takes me 2. So mm-hmm. 8 plus 2 is 10, but I was supposed to add 7. I've already added 2. So I have 5 left over. 10 and 5 is 15.
Okay.
But I could also turn that around if I needed to or had to, and I could start on the 7 and I could say, well, to get to 10 from 7, that's 3, but I was supposed to add 8. I've already added 3. That's 5 left over, and 10 and 5 is also 15. So that would be 2 different ways to use partners of 10 to add 8 plus 7. Yeah.
And this is not a modeling conversation, but if you are representing because you already use these relationships, your 10 and your 15 should be in the same place on your 2 separate number lines.
And your 7. So if I look at my paper right now, the 7 on the second number line is to the left of the 8, but everything else lines up. The 10s are in vertical lineup and the 15s are in vertical lineup. The jumps of 5 are the same size.
Yep.
The jump of 2 and 3 are different sizes.
Yep.
Yeah. All important. By the way, Kim, that's important for teachers to get right.
Yes.
It's not important to enforce on students.
Yeah. And you're not going to be perfect right away, right?
Teachers aren't going to be perfect. Just do your best. Yep, do your best.
Get better and better.
In fact, one of the ways that we suggest teachers get better at making their jumps proportional so they sort of fit the size is to actually talk out loud while you're drawing them. Mm-hmm. That's going to be helpful for kids. If you say, okay, so 8 and 2 to 10, yet you said you had 5 left over. Okay, 5 is much bigger than 2. So I'm going to make this jump bigger. All right, 15. And then if you do the one below it, you can say, well, if I'm going to start on 7, that's back here. That's 1 back from 8. So I'm kind of pointing to the left a little bit. I'm going to start on 7. When I jump 3, that better be bigger than that jump of 2. Like you mm-hmm. literally talk out loud about what you could be thinking about. And if you miss something, because you're talking out loud, you might actually have a student say, hey, shouldn't that jump be longer? And bam, you are building their proportional reasoning at the same time.
That's a favorable
outcome.
Comment yeah. from your kids.
Yes. Nice. All right. So 8 plus 7, we did partners of 10. What's the next one? Doubles?
Doubles.
Okay. So if I'm thinking about 8 plus 7, that's almost too easy with doubles, but I could think about the under double, like you said, 7 plus 7. If 7 plus 7 is 14, then 8 plus 7 is one more than that, 15.
Or I could I'm sorry. As I was over on one side of my paper, but when you went to doubles, I totally went back to where I was writing because it would be a really fun conversation to find the doubles within my problem and the doubles within your problem and have a conversation with kids about how you needed plus one and I needed plus two and how, how that's related to the 15 and 16.
Because my numbers are only one off and your numbers, your 7 plus 9 were two off. My 7 plus 8 or 8 plus 7 is only one off. Oh, nice. Yep. Okay, cool. So I'll finish the double by saying I could think about 8 plus 7 as 8 plus 8, which is 16, but it's only 8 plus 7, which is one less. So 8 plus 7 would be 15.
Yep.
Cool. Okay. How about, Kim, don't let me forget. I want to talk about teachers needing to know all of the strategies.
Okay.
Okay. Last one, the idea of over. So I've got 8 plus 7. I typically, if I was going to do over, would kind of use the commutative property first. And so I'm actually going to do that because that's where my brain's going. So I'm thinking about 7 plus 8 as 7 plus 10. That's 17, but I've added a bit too much. I only needed to add 8. I added 10. So it's too much. So I back up 2 from 17 and that's 15. Mm-hmm. Now I'll do the way it was given to me, 8 plus 7. So I can think about starting on the 8. Adding 10, that's 18. But from 8, I was only supposed to add 7, not 10. So that's 3 less. And 3 less than 18 is 15. And on my paper right now, I have two number lines. I have the 7 is the furthest number to the left on the first number line. And right below it on the second problem, when I started with the 8, that 8 is to the right a little bit. The jump of 10s are the same length. And so when I jumped of 10 from 7 to get to 17, when I jumped from 10 to get to 18, the jumps are the same size, but because I started farther to the right, the 17 is one place and the 18 is just to the right of it. But when I backed up 2 on the first problem, backed up 3 on the second problem, they both line up and the 15s, I'll be honest, are not quite in line, but they should be. On my paper, they're not quite. I was getting to the edge of my paper and I was kind of running out on 18. Didn't go quite as far as I wish it.
Excellent.
I wish it did. Cool. So teachers, no matter where you are, you can sort of practice figuring out, can I use all of these relationships? Have you built the relationships? If you have, then you can practice representing them. How are you modeling those and everything in between?
Hey, you wanted to talk about teachers knowing all the strategies.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It is most important for teachers to know all these strategies so that you can clearly and expertly help your students build them. Mm-hmm. It's also important for students to build these, but as long as they got most of them, we're pretty happy.
Yeah.
Like our goal is to always develop all the relationships because we just want to keep developing all the math. But it's most important for teachers to have them all because you want to be able to, when a student says, I don't know, 8 plus 7, you want to be able to say, well, what do you know? Mm-hmm. And then you have in your repertoire things to say, well, do you want to get to 10? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That might be helpful. Do you know a double? Do you know 8 and 8? Do you know 7 and 7? Or you might say, do you want to add a little too much and then adjust? Mm-hmm. Like you need to know those so that when a kid is stuck and you say, well, what do you know? And they're like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, 8, 9, 10, 11. They start counting by ones. You're like, hey, you can count by ones.
Yeah.
Well, what else, you know, like, what do you know? And then you can kind of lob out these major relationships so that then they could go, oh yeah, I do know that. I can work on that. I can build from there. So super important, teachers, that you don't just decide, well, I got one. I got a favorite. I'm good enough.
Yeah.
You need to know them all so you can prompt them in your kids.
Well, and you and I feel so strongly about knowing your content, knowing your kids. And if you're sitting down with a student and you're not sure what they know, or the more that you know your content, the more you can kind of poke into their brain and find out where you can meet them.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we did in our problem string books is think really hard about how to develop each of these major relationships. Yeah. how many problem strings to give teachers as examples of building them, how to tweak the problem string from string to string, how to up the ante in between strings so that once you've done some work, they can get a little bit, a bit more complicated, more complex, so kids continue to build their thinking. We really thought long and hard about that. It's been super fun to work not only on these younger relationships, but then to also in the same book, once we've done problem strings with single digit facts like we've just done, to then have those strategies grow up into relationships for bigger numbers. Mm-hmm. So like Kim, partners of 10, mm-hmm. that grows up when we're doing double digit numbers mm-hmm. to
partners of 100 and get to a friendly number. You know, if we know partners, then we can get to a friendly number really nicely.
So if I'm adding 48 and something, I can think about, oh, well, 48 is almost 50. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of thinking about that partner of 10 in that 40 and that 10. Oh, yeah, I could just use that 8 to get to the 50 to add whatever. I can get to that friendly number. So partners of 10 kind of grow up to get to a friendly number using partners. Doubles kind of can grow up to bigger doubles. And then the plus 10 grows up into add anything friendly that's too big.
Yeah. Well, and really the idea of overing crosses operations as well. So once kids make sense of the idea of using more than you need, that's just not
that's
an
really
addition.
Nice and friendly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You can over subtract and adjust. You can multiply by something too big and then adjust. You can divide by something too big mm-hmm. and then adjust. Yep. Oh, actually, usually it's the dividend that's too big. Anyway. So these small relationships are not only important so kids have access to these small single digit facts, but they grow up mm-hmm. and become the major relationships that kids use to solve bigger number problems. Yep. Totally cool. Kim, this was fun. Thanks. Yep. And listeners, thank you for tuning in and teaching more and more real math. To find out more about the Math is Figureoutable movement, visit mathisfigureoutable.com. Let's keep spreading the word that math is figureoutable. Thank you for listening and making math more figure-outable.
Remember, we're going to be opening registration for the Math is Figure-Outable Challenge soon. Mark your calendar for May 15th through 17th. You are not going to want to miss these free PD evenings where you'll learn 4 routines you need in your classroom that are naturally engaging and encourage students to think mathematically.
And remember, if you can't make those times, registering gets you access to the recordings. Keep making math figure-outable.